Welcome to the Journey 8. I'm Reverend Judy Hosner, and I invite you to sit back and spend a few moments with us as we share some music and dialogue with you. Okay, that was Help Me, Ryan.
The song In the Lord, written and performed by the Taizé community in France.
Yes, I knew that. In fact, that soprano voice is just like mine. We're off to a bad start already.
It will get better, I promise.
Okay, so tonight... We're gonna try a little experiment here, and what we've done is, yesterday my church revising or updating some of our church documents that people read when they come in the doorway and stuff, and. We decided to have, we being the panel, I'm one of many on the panel, we decided to have some input from the members. So we set up little workshop areas for the five different parts of our core values, and it was very interesting. Of course, I drew the first one. Now, any person with any law background knows your first paragraph of any document is the sucker. The one that just gets them around the neck and... Well... Oh, I forgot. You can't see me do that. This is radio. Dang, 3 years. When are you going to get it right? Anyway. So, you know, the first one is pretty much an interesting one. If you had, and here's how I'm going to make you be involved. If you had a church that was just starting up, or a prayer group, or whatever you want to identify yourself as, how would you write a piece of paper or document that says who you are? In other words, your core values of your ministry are what? What do you do as a community, you know, as a church or whatever? So here's some ideas, and I think you can kick off with them. We welcome fully and enthusiastically persons of every identity. Now, in essence, what we're saying is we are open and affirming. And that's what we've been talking about the last few shows. So, you know, you want to hit that first sentence with, we are a bunch of purple-painted munchkins, or whatever. And the idea being that you give people enough information that you can say, we welcome everyone from every religious heritage to age, ability, gender, identity, whatever. Now, what do you think happens when you put something like that on a piece of paper? Ryan?
Well, you missed the important part, which is that the church welcomes everybody because it recognizes theologically that every person is a child of God.
Oh, I missed that.
Everybody was created in the image of God. And that's the important thing to not skip over, that we're all children of God equally, and we're all beloved. And so that's the core of the community. How do you function in that way? It makes it easier to treat everybody as you want to be treated yourself. The golden rule. And it's very simple.
It's what?
It's very simple. Well, the golden rule is very simple.
That's right.
Treat others the way you want to be treated yourself.
And in that, just like in John 3:16, it isn't treat everybody that is white, middle class, and so on and so forth. It says in John 3:16, of course, it says whosoever, not whosoever that wears tennis shoes and you know. And it's an interesting concept because it's all through the Bible, not just the New Testament, that, you know, you look at the Ten Commandments, and the first one right off the bat, you know, talks about, you know, loving God, loving yourself, and loving your neighbor, and so on and so forth. So if you have a need to identify your group, whatever your group is, give some thought to really what you want to tell a stranger who's walking up to your church and reading your, you know, your little stuff on the wall. Because that little stuff on the wall makes a big difference sometimes. Either that person's going to come in and sit down, or they're going to turn around and walk away.
Right. And the documents that you create are incredibly important. Because most people nowadays, when they begin church shopping, they look on your website. And this will be a document that will be on your website. And so it's important that you don't just say what you think people want to hear, that you actually live into the values you espouse. Because if you don't, one, it's dishonest. But more importantly than that, people who are hurting will come to your congregation thinking it's a place of healing and love, and it may not be. Yes. So I think that going through this exercise is important for congregations and individuals so that you can recognize, I don't want to say weaknesses, but the places where you can grow more fully. And there's nothing wrong with being honest about where you're at. As a Christian, you're not all the way at the end game. You haven't learned all the lessons you need to learn. You are not Christ-like. You're still working into that. Right. So being honest about it, I think, is the most Christian thing you can do.
And it was quite a experience for us to take the old version of this document that was drawn up when the church was founded, 10 or 15 years ago, and then try and bring it into the 21st century. Because what was written a decade ago, of course, isn't how people think today, people experience today, you know. And so it was really, truly an exercise of think tank type stuff, you know. I jumped out of the Shark Tank into the think tank. Okay, so we're gonna say number one is just our kaboomy type of thing that says, please read on, you know, read on and find out who we really are. Right?
Well, there's a little bit more to it though.
Ah.
The first part is we welcome fully and enthusiastically. And that can be easily overlooked. And when I read that, I think of enthusiastic as being in action. So I'm not just saying that I accept every people, I'm doing something that makes that appropriate. Meaning, if a new person comes in to the church, they can sit wherever they want. And I'm not gonna say, you're sitting in my spot. Because right. That is not an enthusiastic welcome. I'm going to show you around and I'm going to engage you in conversation. I'm going to be enthusiastic about welcoming you, which means it's not just going to be a theoretical thing or an abstraction. It's something I do with my hands and with my and with my mouth. And that's why this is the statement is important, because oftentimes congregations say have statements like this, but it's just a statement. They don't actually mean it. And so I think that really thinking about how we welcome people as individuals into our space is important. Not how do we think that we should respond to new people, but how do we in reality respond to people? And if it matches with where we think we should be, then what are we willing to do as a congregation to really wrestle with that so that we can be better and be more enthusiastic and welcome?
Yeah, part of what we struggled with is how do we, throughout the whole document, how do we express that without sounding like phony baloney, you know, type stuff? And how do we express in 21st century what, you know, we were talking about a decade ago? And I think we made the transition. I'm just curious because we had a lot of comments on my section about why do we have the list in the second part in the order that it is? Seems to be a hierarchy. So I said, well, there's nothing that keeps us from putting it in alphabetical order. Then it doesn't reflect anything but that the information is in alphabetical order. So it was a pretty interesting kickoff. I didn't have too many bruises, and so I was happy.
You can't get out of a church committee meeting without at least one bruise.
Oh yeah. So you want to take the second one?
Sure. So the second part is aspiring to be an extravagantly welcoming community that creates a place of safety and sanctuary, which allows for the healing of wounds, the development of gifts, and is free of judgment and shame. And as a marginalized person, I can say how very important that this is, that welcoming people isn't just saying, please sit in my pew, or why don't you join the choir, which happens to me often. And that is not welcoming to me. The first thing a welcoming community can do is to find out, what does this person who's walking into my door need? They're looking for something. So you should ask the question, what are you looking for and how can I help you get there?
Right.
And if you're not, then you're not really an extravagantly welcoming community. And that's okay if you're not there. You should own it and be clear about it.
Yeah.
But creating a place of safety and sanctuary, and I'll start with the healing part because that's really important. Most people nowadays are either unchurched or they're considered a nun, which means they don't affiliate with any denomination or any religious anything. And a lot of those people, the latest poll I saw was 70%, were people who had been damaged by the church and had left. So these are the types of people that are coming through your doors. They're not just people, you know, Christians who have moved and are looking for another church. They're people that who may not have been in a congregation in a decade or more, who are coming with scars that were given to them by other Christians. And that needs to be addressed, because often, and I would say almost 100% often, people that are coming that haven't been to church for a while have some scars. And you can't say as a Christian, I'm not responsible for that and therefore I don't need to deal with it. If somebody is coming to you who has been hurt by other Christians, as a Christian, it is very much your job to help heal that wound. And if you're not willing to heal, then you're not an extravagantly welcoming community. And that's just all there is to it. And so I say that because a lot of congregations their membership is dwindling and their tithes are down. And so, and I say this from experience, we would encourage people to come through our doors so that they could join the choir or they could tithe more. And so it was really more about how the community could come in and rescue the church instead of saying, this is the church and this is what we have to offer people. And you can't do that. When you do that, either consciously or unconsciously, you are creating more wounds. You're causing more scars. And there are plenty of scars that have been left already. And so creating a safe space is not as easy as it sounds. And it isn't just being in conversation, though that certainly helps. It's about the type of conversation you have. You need to get to know new people when they walk in through your doors. You need to know why they're there, what they're looking for, what has hurt them in the past, as well as their gifts. You have to look at the whole person. And you can't just look at the person and say, ah, this is a warrior. This is what I can do with this person.
Right.
Cannot see people as a resource to be used. That is not safe space, and that does not create healing. Now, the other part of this is developing gifts, and that's important too. So you take the time to help people develop their spiritual gifts and what other kind of gifts there might be. I learned quite a lot about leadership when I was active in my church before I came to seminary, and that was a wonderful thing for me to get, was that experience and that ability to do that. So I'm grateful for my home church for allowing me to develop my leadership and those other gifts that I had. And the other part of it is to do all of this in a place of freedom without judgment and shame. And that's tricky. You know, often when I was at church, people would ask me, well, you haven't been damaged by anybody here, have you? Nobody said anything homophobic to you, have they? And I had to say, yes, they have. And then they didn't want to hear anymore because they weren't prepared to deal with it. And so, and also part of it too was the culture of this particular congregation was very much rooted in duty and responsibility. So you should be leading Sunday school and you should be doing all these things because it's needed. And if you don't do it, it won't happen. So instead of saying this could be a wonderful learning experience for you, it's the church needs this. So it wasn't necessarily judgment on the whole, but there was a certain expectation. And you wouldn't necessarily be shamed for not doing it, but you weren't not shamed for it either. So you have to be really careful. The absence of something isn't necessarily a positive. The absence of shame doesn't necessarily mean that the environment is healthy and whole and loving.
Right. And truly, what we're trying to say or what we're attempting to say in step number two is that, you know, we know we're going to make mistakes. That's why we say we aspire to be extravagantly welcome.
Right, we aspire.
You know, and, you know, that we want to be a sanctuary of all kinds, you know. And we're going to see, and have seen over the years, wounds of all kinds. So as we grow as a church, we're able to offer more. And I think that's a real tenuous place to be. Only because.
That's beautiful, because you're allowed to fail.
Yes.
And people should be allowed to do that. Yes. And that's really important as we live into being more Christ-like, is that we're gentle with ourselves, but we're also gentle with other people. And you really need community to learn that. So church isn't about always succeeding in things. It's about failing and being able to fail in a graceful environment where you're supported in that.
Right. So, two, in its entirety, really tags to step number three, I think, anyway. And then step number three, we're talking about celebrating individual uniqueness and differences as gifts. You know, so many times you go to church and you are more into acting and doing plays and stuff. But what they need you for is to paint the doors and help the children's ministry for whatever reason. And so your actual gifts are never, ever identified, number one, and welcomed and encouraged. And I've seen many times where people, you know, they automatically drift to the choir. And they may sing like Froggy, you know, but, you know, to the choir they go. And, you know, we are trying to say, listen, take your time. You know, go around and figure out what it is that really moves you spiritually. And when you do that, you're going to be supported as much as possible. Be supported when you find that that difference or that gift, and that we are going to try and incorporate that, if it's something new, into our community. Unlike a lot of traditional churches where they say, oh, we haven't done that.
And therefore, we're not going to do that.
That's right. And you get, pardon me. You get a lot of inward damage. You know, no one's actually saying anything bad to you, or, you know, but you have not accomplished any more at our church than any other church, because you never found your gift, and you were never encouraged to find your gift.
Right. I think it's important to note that our differences and our gifts are gifts from God, and they're meant to be used. So when a church encourages you not to use your gifts but do the things that they need, they're not acting in a godly way.
Well, and you're right back where you started from.
And so it's really important for you to honor your gifts and your foibles and your differences. And if you can't do it at church, you should do it somewhere, because that is the juice for you as an individual. That is what makes your heart sing. And God wants all of our hearts to sing. So if you're in the choir and you don't want to be, and it's taking up all of your time so that you can't, you know, write a blog, and that's what you really feel led to do, then they're holding you back. And you really need to do what God wants you to do, because that's for your own benefit.
Sing me a song. Yes,
you want me to sing?
Yes. Come on.
So I think that's a good segue into the next song. So we're going to play the song Cabbage, which was written by Mindy Dillard and performed by Mindy and my friend Eric McEwen. This song can be found on their album Heart Roots.
There'll be cabbage in heaven. There'll be cabbage in heaven. There'll be cabbage in heaven at the salad bar. There'll be bacon in heaven. There'll be bacon in heaven. There'll be bacon and cabbage in heaven at the salad bar. The table will be open. The table will be open. Oh, the table will be open in the lunchroom in heaven, with the bacon and cabbage at the salad bar. It'll be a safe table. It'll be a safe table. It'll be a safe table. The table will be open in the lunchroom in heaven, with the bacon and cabbage at the salad bar. I can eat all the food there. I can eat all the food there. I can eat all the food there at that safe table. The table will be open in the lunchroom in heaven, with the bacon and cabbage at the salad bar. No one there will go hungry. No one there will go hungry. No one there will go hungry. I can eat all the food there at that safe table. The table will be open in the lunchroom in heaven, with the bacon and cabbage at the salad bar. You can come join me. You can come join me. Oh, you can come join me, where no one will go hungry. I can eat all the food there at that safe table. The table will be open in the lunchroom in heaven, with the bacon and cabbage at the salad bar.
Oh my God, that is an awesome song. I've never heard it before, Ryan, and it is awesome. I love it.
It's quirky and it's spiritual all at the same time.
Oh yeah, it's got that gospel feeling. Wonderful. Okay, so what number are we on, Mr. Ryan?
I still want to stay on this topic that we were on, because the second part of this, first you've got your individual uniqueness and your difference is a gift from God, but the second part is we seek unity without expectation of uniformity. And this is really something very similar to what we were talking about last episode when we were talking about the Methodist Church. Because for them, unity must be in conformity and in sameness. And, or at least as far as doctrine's concerned, they may have a little more wiggle room as far as how you worship and all of that. But at the core of their belief is that unity must be through uniformity. And I disagree with that so much on theological terms and in practical terms too. And so I'm glad that that was included here, because this is where all of our witch hunts come from, is saying, oh, well, we're not in lockstep agreement, but we have to be in unity. And so nowadays in America, I've heard numbers of, America has up to 30,000 different denominations, because each different branch of Christianity is splintered off into so many different ones, so that everybody can worship together out of sameness. And so we've become more and more divided as a country, not just in our religion, but in our politics and everything else. Sunday is the most segregated time of the week in our country. And that's because we find safety in similarity. And when we're worshiping, we want to feel safe. So we want to be around people that look like us, who sound like us, who have the same language that we do, and who have the same beliefs. And so I think we're getting into this area where a lot of Christians value the church because it's safe, and therefore it's the same. And I really think that if we go back to the early church, we'll find a group of people who didn't always agree, but they could be in community anyway because of those differences. And I think that that really is where the church needs to be, is finding unity in difference. Instead of saying, okay, you're a new member to the church And I see you're a little bit different. You've got tattoos and pink hair. So let's talk about it some more. And then hopefully in a couple months, you'll recognize that you shouldn't have pink hair and tattoos. And mm-hmm. maybe when you come to church, you cover them up because we've converted you to our way of thinking. So, and this is a problem within progressive churches, I think, is that we act like we really value difference. Then when you look around the sanctuary on Sunday, we all look the same. And that's because we don't really know what to do difference. We value it academically, but it's in conflict with our lived need to feel safe.
Oh, a lot of times what happens in churches is that protocols and processes are put together from the brain and not from the heart.
Yes.
And God works from the heart. There isn't a preacher, hopefully, that won't tell you that where God works is in the heart, not the brain. You're not going to find God in your brain. So, you know, be like me, be stupid. And
yeah, but that's the other one of the church's problems, is we're so focused on the sermon as being the heart of worship, right, which is the word made manifest. But I don't think that sermons make the word manifest. I think our actions do that. I'm going to get off a tangent and go down a rabbit hole. So, Judy, you need to stop me.
Okay, stop. We're on number three. We made it to number three. I'm amazed. Number three really kind of goes hand in hand with number two, and that we're saying we're going to celebrate individual uniqueness and differences as gifts from God, and we seek them without expectation of uniformity, as we just talked. Here's the deal. If I walk into a country Baptist church, and I'm not just picking on Baptists, but I'm just kind of giving a visual. Church has been there for 180 years. And we have a lot of them around here in North Carolina because of the location of where we were during the Civil War and so on and so forth. And I walk in, and the first thing I see is nothing. I see nothing. I see a room that, you know, when you walk in, you got a narthex and there's some pamphlets and stuff. No one greets me. So I open the next set of doors and the service is started, of course. And I quietly take a seat in the back row of pews. No one greets me. The service is over, and I sneak out, and since I'm in the last row, I'm first out. The pastor greets me and says, you know, nice of you to come. What's your name?
You got greeted finally.
Yes.
At the
so,
end.
You know, we have tremendous ushers in our church. They do such a great job of making sure halfway through the service, they finally sit down, making sure that the latecomers are still greeted and pointed to a chair where they can sit and given a hymnal and so on and so forth. I've seen so many churches that as soon as the service starts, all the ushers disappear. All the greeters disappear. And so people coming in are just kind of slithering to the last row of chairs, you know. So I like that concept, and it works well in our church. And we kept this paragraph pretty much in its original context because there's not a way you can change what it's saying, other than we talked about the expectation of uniformity, as you did. And we made that a stronger statement. So
well, it has other implications too, though. I've been in congregations where we can't be in conflict. One side has to immediately cave if there's a disagreement, because that creates discord. And to be a good Christian, we have to be at peace all the time. So instead of teaching us how to be in difference and work through that, or to even accept the differences and not move, we're not trained how to be in dialogue or in conflict. And that's a big failing of the progressive church, I think, is that we're in a position where we should be teaching love in concrete ways. And that means learning how to listen to people, how to speak to people respectfully, and how to be in dialogue even when we're in disagreement, so that nobody feels disrespected or disenfranchised.
That's right. And there's many lessons where Jesus teaches the 12 that you can disagree with each other, and you can stay in disagreement, and you can still love each other. And when you work through it, Paul says, in the end, you will see the face of Jesus. You will have worked your way to, you know, where you should be. And so your friend Sam sees something different. That's a gift. That's wonderful. It is not something to fight over, you know? He sees, you know, lights coming through the sanctuary on the left side and not on the right side. And, of course, you see light all over. So what do? You say, I love you, and I'm glad that you can see that. In fact, Jesus gives exact instructions on what to do in a conflict. And if you cannot resolve your conflict, you bring in a mediator. And if the conflict is still there, you know, and so on and so forth. So we have no excuse in this century, especially, where we are pushing through the progressive church, trying to do it different. Why would we want to stay at this point where, you know, argument, gossip, it all means nothing if tomorrow you die? It means nothing. You know, I want to die with a clean heart. I want to die or pass on, whatever term you want to use, knowing that I did the best I could. I turned my cheek and walked away when I could not resolve, you know. When we say that we are trying to provide a free and an open place for people who have been so damaged, so injured, so, you know, just, I mean, I can't even tell you some of the things that happened to me. My friend, who is a songwriter and is finally getting some recognition, she sings beautifully, has tattoos and rings in her nose and pink stripes in her hair. And that's my friend Jen. I mean, you won't see any. Jen will never be in a dress. Well, she was on her wedding day, but you know, she is a t-shirt and, you know, a ragged old shirt with a guitar creating a song. But I will tell you, one of the stories that she talks about in her ministry is one of the churches she went to, when the music coordinator went to meet her because she was going to be in the service sometime. Looked at her and said, you will have to wear a long sleeve shirt and take off the makeup and everything on your face. And Jen looked at him and said, why? He says, well, we don't allow that in this church. We look for purity. And Jen turned around, grabbed her guitar and said, what you're asking is wrong. And I will not play in a place where I can't play as me. I mean, that's a true story. And that's how churches hurt people.
And it seems like such an innocent, small thing. And if you were to say something to those people who did that, they would not see the significance of what they just did.
No, because they've been so, I don't want to say brainwashed, but so set that motion that they don't know that there's some other ways to do things. They don't know that it's okay to let somebody on your stage that has tattoos and rings in their nose and stuff. Who cares? You know? And I just love her dearly. And now that she is an ordained minister, she goes around the countryside wherever people ask for her and sings beautiful songs that she wrote. But in the interim time after that experience, she would not go to church. She got started in heavy metal and played that for a while because she needed to get rid of the energy. You know? And slowly she, you know, drifted towards all of us ragtag group, and now she's singing for the Lord. It's an important thing for a church to do. It's simple, so simple, but it's so important. Is look at that person without judgment.
And then you talk to that person.
Yes. All right. We need another song.
Yes, we do. That's the last song, and it'll close us out for the evening. It works very well. This is Sing a New Church, and it's written and performed by Fran McKendry, who is a Methodist out of North Carolina.
We have a minute, and I want to say something that I've not said yet. And I don't know if you've all noticed how far my co-host Ryan has come from his first jump in the water. He was swimming with little fishies then. Now I got him in the shark pool, and dodging sharks is fun. But what I wanted to say more than anything is that it's been a pleasure, and I know that right now my brain is recovering from trauma, and we're going to be all right. It's good to have somebody I can have step in. But more than that, tonight was a classic example of the differences between his music style, his worship style, and mine. And yet, we stumbled onto each other, and I believe make a good combination.
I agree, yes. We do, we make a good combination. And we make a good combination because we're not the same.
Absolutely. I mean, we learn the same things in seminary to some degree. But you know what? That's just books. You know? That's just books. Well, how you take that information and go out in the world with it is what you become, what you are. You know, some theologians are like me. They're pretty much book readers and stuff. and teachers. Others, like you, are willing to explore the unknown, shall we say.
That's a good way to put that.
Yes. And it's a good experience to see how flexible our churches are. Can we go a whole new direction and be successful? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it, buddy.
Sounds like we've got a whole nother set of things to talk about next week. Where the church is going, and is the church flexible enough to get there?
Yes. Okay, so let's wrap it up, Mr. Engineer, and let us go home.
Thank you so much for spending time with us this evening. Please come back again. And remember, be kind in all you do, and the kindness will come back to you. Grace and peace, Reverend Judy Hosner.